Columbia brings you as guest stars, two deaf players from the movie lots of Hollywood, the stages of Broadway, Mr. Lester Landy and Mr. George Koulouris. They are here to spend with us a half hour of suspense. Suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are stories calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. Tonight, for instance, Miss Landy plays for us an agreeable young lady who is on the trail of some hot money. And Mr. Koulouris plays for us a disagreeable young man who may or may not know more about the money than he says. We trust that with this tale we shall keep you in suspense.
For suspense tonight, CBS presents Alyssa Landy and George Koulouris in Nothing Up My Sleeve by John Dixon Carr.
It's New Year's Eve, remember? Times Square is celebrating. The fiery lights flash no longer, but the crowds are still the same. Thronging, jostling, singing, drowning out a voice at the street corner when it says,
Fatal gunfire, let you make it. Read all about it. Fatal gunfire, let you make it. Read all about it.
But would that cry perhaps reach as far as a large and sedate country house some 20 miles from New York? Out there, the earth is sealed up with snow. The white pillars of the house rise up high and ghostly against it, showing no outward light. A lonely house, this mansion in fir wood.
Just the place for a murder, I've always said.
Wouldn't surprise me either. These Ralphs are a funny lot.
And alone in that house tonight, apparently alone, is a man practicing shots in a billiard room, a long and paneled room at the back of the house. Now, look at Mr. Derek Ross. Tall and lean and well-tailored as ever. Many people don't like him. He's a little too supercilious, a little too sure of himself, too suggestive of the lifted lip and the glazed eye. There he stands in the billiard room, under the snow-covered skylight, leaning over the green cloth under brilliant lights when...
Huh? Just a moment, please. Ah, good shot. Yes, come in.
Excuse me, Mr. Ross.
Oh, not at all.
Hey, but aren't you Miss... I'm Dorothy Dale, your aunt's social secretary. Surely you remember that.
Oh, of course, of course. Forgive me for forgetting your name. You surprised me, Dorothy.
Yes, I thought I surprised you a little.
No, I mean you surprised me by being in the house at all.
Why?
Why? Well, this is New Year's Eve. Shouldn't you be out getting drunk and blowing cardboard horns and doing the other fantastic things that people do?
I haven't much heart for that tonight.
Please, don't become emotional, Dorothy. I detest emotion. If you're shivering, go over by the radiator.
Mr. Ross, may I ask you a question?
Of course.
Did you ever feel sick at heart?
Huh?
Physically sick, I mean, so that your insides turned over and you couldn't get your breath and... Did you?
No. No, I can't say I did. May I move you aside just a moment? Thank you. Not bad.
Can't you guess why I came here to see you tonight?
No.
Because I'm in terrible trouble, Mr. Ross. Desperate trouble. And I think you can help me.
I can help you? How?
For one thing, you're making quite a name for yourself as a lawyer.
Yes, that's what others have told me.
For another thing... Do you know a man named Shark Morgan?
Shark Morgan. Shark, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Shark Morgan. No, I'm sure I've never heard that name before.
You ought to know him. He's a little dark-faced man with most of his upper lip cut away in a knife fight so that you can see all his teeth. That's why they call him Shark.
Oh, he sounds like an unpleasant-looking person.
He is, or was, a ghastly-looking person. You don't know him? He's not a client of yours?
No.
I don't believe you.
Just a moment, Miss Dorothy Dale. I must put down this cue and say a few words myself.
Please do.
I don't want to be offensive to you, but it seems to me that for a paid employee of my aunt, practically a servant, you're taking a great deal on yourself.
If you're trying to hurt me that way, you're succeeding. But go ahead.
You come to me at 11 o'clock at night. You come rushing into this billiard room. Oh, observe, I call it a billiard room, so this is actually a pool table. Just as everything in life gets its wrong name.
I entirely agree.
Yes, but you agree about what?
That everything gets its wrong name. Honest men are called thieves, and thieves are called honest men.
Would you mind explaining that remark to me?
I can explain it very easily. I'm engaged to be married to Jerry Winton.
Well?
Don't say you don't know who Jerry Winton is. He was in college with you.
I played on our extremely second-rate baseball team with him, yes.
You never liked him, did you?
Liked him? I'm afraid I never noticed it.
Jerry Winton works at City and Provincial Bank on 51st Street. He's a teller there. Does that mean anything to you?
No. You see, it's not my bank.
I was at the City and Provincial Bank yesterday afternoon. Yesterday afternoon, Mr. Rolfe. Just before closing time. It was a dark day and the lights were on. There weren't many people in that big marble hall. I went up to Jerry's window, if that's what you call it. Can you catch a check for $1 million?
Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Jerry. You glad to see me?
I am not pleased to see you here, Dolly.
What?
I'm never pleased to see you here.
And why not?
Because I can't make love to you. Can you imagine anybody making love at the bank?
Oh, we might sneak into the president's office.
As a matter of fact, I've dreamed of holding a party in there. God, it'll never happen. Unless I'm fired, which is very likely.
Jerry, sometimes I wish you weren't so easygoing.
I'm not easygoing with the bank's money, Dolly. Otherwise, I'd be shoving it out to you through the window in double handfuls like this.
Jerry, for heaven's sake, no.
State your business, madam. The convict in the next cage is watching us already.
I want to cash a check. Here it is. $20. That is, if my account can stand it.
Yes, I think we can manage that. How do you have it?
Oh, it doesn't matter anyway. Jerry.
What's wrong?
Look over there.
Where?
Over there by that marble table with the pens and ink on it. The little man with no upper lip to his mouth and all his teeth showing.
Ugly looking devil, I admit.
He's carrying something like a violin case.
Hold on. I've seen that fellow someplace before.
Of course you have. Don't you remember where?
It was
out at Mr. Rolfe's house in the country when you came to visit me last Sunday. The man with the teeth and five other men were coming out on the porch as we were going in.
Wait a minute, Dolly. That's not all.
What is it?
There's some very funny-looking customers in this bank right now.
Where?
At Mr. Wallace's window. At Mr. Robinson's window. And up by the guard at the front door.
They don't seem to make any sound. As though they all wore rubber-soled shoes. Jerry, something's going to happen.
I know it is. Unless I can get off this stool and...
Call your attention, folks. Just call your attention.
Now,
just stand where you are, all of you. Nobody I can hide.
Darling, I'm scared. Well, what should I do?
Just stand still.
I don't dare turn around.
Everybody,
yes, he's got
the machine gun. You know, any funny business about alarm bells, see? One of the boys has already gone behind to pick up the collection. Now, just stay where you are. That's all you got to do.
You can't get away with
this. Oh, look, boys. Here's a guy at the front with a nice mahogany desk and a plate with his name on it who says we can't get away with it. That's yours.
I don't do it, Sean. I wasn't in our order,
so we can't get away with it.
He's crazy.
Now, you hear somebody else talking?
Jerry!
Somebody over there. Oh, you kid.
Move to one side of the window, Dolly. Move to one side of the window.
Don't worry, kid. I ain't gonna hurt you.
No?
Not a bit of it. Thanks for helping us. You'll get your cut later.
What do you mean, my cut?
It's what I said. You'll get your share when we divvy up.
But I don't know anything about this robbery.
All right, kid. We'll take care of you.
I tell you, I don't know anything about this robbery.
Jerry!
In the end pocket.
Ah.
Got it.
Are you listening, Mr. Rolfe?
Well, this Sharp Morgan must have been quite a fool. I grant you that.
He was a fool. He must have been crazy. But they've held Jerry at police headquarters just the same.
Well, that's very unfortunate if he's innocent.
You know he's innocent.
I'm afraid I don't know anything about it.
Don't you even know what happened today? Haven't you read the newspaper?
No.
The police trapped that whole gang in a Long Island farmhouse. There was a gunfight.
Oh, is that so? Oh, no casualties, I hope.
You hope?
I must tell you again, Dorothy, don't be emotional. I detest emotion.
The whole gang were killed, every last one of them, including Sharp Morgan. So there's nobody to talk, nobody to tell.
But, as you were saying?
They didn't find the money.
What money?
The stolen money. $88,000 taken from that bank, and yet the police can't find a cent of it. Shall I tell you why, Mr. Ralph? Because it was passed on to somebody else for safekeeping.
Oh, passed on to somebody else.
That's what I said.
Well, perhaps your friend Jerry Winton could tell us where it is.
That's what the police think. Oh, can you imagine what he's going through tonight?
Well, it's not a pleasant way to spend New Year's Eve, I admit. Excuse me. But, you know, after all, the late Sharp Morgan did accuse Winton. Now, if he isn't guilty, why should Morgan accuse him?
Meanness.
I don't think I understand.
Meanness? The sort of meanness that some people call a sense of humor. Morgan saw Jerry in this house.
Oh, be careful, young lady. That's an actionable statement.
I've already made it to the police, thanks.
Oh, and did they believe you?
No.
They're a very intelligent crowd down at Center Street. And after all, your story isn't very credible.
Why not?
But Sharp Morgan sees your friend Winton. Sees him for perhaps 10 seconds coming out of this house. And then accuses him of complicity in a bank robbery. Now, is that very likely?
Yes, very likely. If somebody put him up to it.
Again, I don't understand.
Somebody deliberately told Morgan to accuse Jerry and get him into as much trouble as possible. Tell me, Mr. Roth, why do you dislike Jerry so much?
You know, now that you mention
it, far from here is the man who engineered the whole robbery. Planned it and staged it and got his accomplices killed.
My goodness, he must have supernatural powers.
No witnesses, nobody to testify. Oh, if I could only find the money.
$88,000, I think you said.
I could only find the